Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Hi, this is Eva Herr, and welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight. Thanks for taking the time out of your schedule to be with us. And tonight I have a guest that I haven't had in a long time, and I welcome him back to my show tonight. Hello, Billy Best. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for taking the time to come on. I can't wait to hear what you've been doing all these years and to tell my listeners again and remind them about what happened and some choices that we have. So before we get started, why don't you just tell us where people can find you and tell us about your new book?
Well, people can find me pretty easily if you type my name into your search engine. So Google Billy Best, you'll find out, a lot of things. A lot of things I went through when I was younger. And, it might bring you to things that I'm doing today.
Why don't you spell your name to make sure everybody spells Billy the right way?
Billy Best. It's BILLYBEST.
And what's the name of your new book?
The name of my book is The Billy Best Story, and it's available on Amazon. It's electronically available with Amazon's Kindle, and it's also in bookstores in the New England area.
And do you have a website?
I do. The website for the book is thebillybeststory.com. My mother's general website about my story and what we go through, it's billybest.net. They're all connected, so any way you do it, if you Google Billy Best, you can find out a lot of information. And there's contact information if you had any further questions. I'm excited to have the book out because it's, it's the conversation you have with somebody, like a one-on-one conversation. I don't know how many times I've had it. And, an hour-long conversation is pretty much what my book is. And it explains what I went through with cancer and chemotherapy and, explains why I chose to run away from chemo and ended up pursuing, a natural healing path.
So why don't you start us at the very beginning when you were, 16?
That's
and you're
right.
33 now?
I'm 35 right? Now.
30. Oh, man, Billy. It seems like yesterday when I first talked to you. So why don't you start us at the very beginning and give us a chronology of what happened and take us through your life so we can feel what was happening at the same time you felt it.
Well, I mean, the beginning, cancer.
How did you know you had cancer? How did it start?
The cancer was discomfort in my neck, being tired. I was, a very active teenager, played all sports, liked the skateboard, just had a ton of energy. And when I started falling asleep after school and, only waking up to have dinner and being tired, that was the first sign that something happened. That was followed up by pain in my neck. It was a swollen lymph node. So I had that checked out and, the doctor said, oh, that happens. So if it comes back, let us know. Well, it came back the next day. I was back in the doctor's office getting tests. Couldn't figure out what it was. And it was a chest x-ray. The last thing he did was a chest x-ray. And that's, when he gave me, he suggested I go into Boston to take advantage of the cancer clinics in Boston to, see, what stage I was at. I had a biopsy done. It came back Hodgkin's stage 2A. When I was 16 years old, when I came home that day, found my family was all crying. I thought it was because they were sad because I had been diagnosed with cancer, but it was because my aunt, my father's sister, she had died that same day from chemotherapy poisoning. You know, she was receiving chemo for her breast cancer, and that was the person that I would think of, you know, when they told me I had cancer. She never seemed sick until she began the chemotherapy, and then it just kind of looked like it was eating her from the inside. It took its toll on her, and that's what I saw. I saw her get sick from the medicine and not from the cancer. So early on in my diagnosis, I had no faith in the treatment that they offered for me. I didn't believe it would work for me. I believed that it would hurt me, and since day one, I just started kind of creating an escape plan in my head. You know, when things get too tough, what am I going to do? Because I just want to survive this. And even if it's survive for a few extra months with a better quality of life, I'm willing to take that chance. So at 16, I, you know, began packing my bags and just waiting for a good time to escape. And I say escape because I discussed it with my family, not in depth, but you know, when they said, you know, you have to do chemo, I said, well, I don't want to do chemo. You know, I was 16, and they said, well, you have to because you're a minor, and, you know, we're in charge of you, and we have to do what's best for you, and the doctors say it's the only option is chemo and radiation and surgery. So we have to do that. So I resigned to, you know, begin chemo treatment. Knowing, you know, that I was going to do whatever it took to, you know, live my life the way that I thought was right. So it took about 5 chemo treatments before I really felt like the, you know, the chemo was really starting to kill me. And it was the, you know, if any listeners have been through chemo, it's like a taste that the medicine will give you. It's a smell that'll come off your body after receiving the treatments. It's just this feeling of, you know, this is not, it just doesn't, I didn't feel like a human. And I, you know, I would rather die than live, you know, feeling like a, you know, a toxic experiment.
That's amazing.
After 5 treatments, you know, I wrote my parents a note. I told them I loved them. I told them, you know, it was just the medicine, and I felt like it was killing me instead of curing me. And I you know, got a ride to the bus, and I took off. My goal was to get to California, and just, you know, they gave me like 2 months to live. So I said, well, I could just hang out and, you know, hopefully just die on the beach one night watching the sunset. And, you know, I'd be better than doing it the way that, you know, Judy did it. You know, Judy was in her own home, in the comfort of her own room, receiving treatment, and, you know, she just went down. And I didn't want to go out like that. I just wanted to see more. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to see, you know, at least the United States. And I felt like just going to California would, you know, I could die feeling like I had accomplished something.
Wow, so where did you go, and how did you go? How did you do it?
Well, I took a Greyhound bus from Boston, and I bought a ticket for Lake Charles, Louisiana. I looked on my map. I had a little, you know, a little book with a map of all the states, and I looked, and I said, well, I only have, you know, I have this much money. I should probably spend half of it to get as far away from the hospital as I could. And then the other half I would just use to buy food until I died. And they said I would probably die quickly, so, you know, I wouldn't really have to worry because it would probably happen soon.
Really?
So I looked at the map, and I saw Lake Charles, Louisiana. It was far away. The month I was doing this, it was October, and I knew it was going to get cold, so I wanted to go south because I figured I'd probably be like sleeping on the streets. And that's where I bought the ticket for. And I began my journey. You know, I went through New York City, had a couple-hour layover, went through Washington, Washington, D.C., you know, like an hour layover, all the major cities down there. And I packed, you know, I'd take my bag and I'd put it in the locker. You used to be able to put quarters in a locker and you could store your things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just go out and skateboard for, you know, an hour or 2 hours. And that was, you know, it was the best. I didn't have to worry about somebody putting a poison into my body that I felt was killing me, you know, as the only hope for getting better.
So tell me the first thing that you did. Let's go through your treatment. Well, first of all, did something happen? Did the government or anybody do anything to you?
No. I mean, after I told, it's a long story, and it's, you know,
a quick read
in the Billy Best story. It's a quick read. But after being gone, after running away for 10 days, my parents had no luck with the police as far as any kind of attempt to find me. The police are overwhelmed with runaway kids. I ran away on a Friday. They said, forget about it. Your kid runs away on a Friday, you're never going to find him because, you know, we got the weekend, and then he's going to get away, and it's, you know, there's no hope, so we don't even look for them. And what my parents did after that was they contacted the media. They said, we have a cancer patient. We have a teenager who's receiving chemotherapy that ran away. And the media picked it up right away.
So,
and it was on overnight, it was on every TV across the country. Runaway cancer patient.
And how did you get found?
Well, I didn't get found. I was passing by a television as I watched this story aired. And I had made it all the way to Texas. I made it to Houston, Texas. And I saw it on TV. And, you know, I called home and I told them, don't look for me. I don't want this. Like, I'll hide. Like, I've made it this far. I'll make it. You know, you'll never find me if I go into hiding mode. And I just told them, I mean, I don't want to go back. I don't want the chemo. And, you know, people saw this story, and, you know, people, some people said, what are you, crazy? Get back home. You know, you got chemo. It's good for your kind of cancer. You should take it. You know, but other people, they said, good for you for running away, because chemo is not the only way to treat cancer. There are other things you can do. You know, there's things you can do with your diet. There's things you can do with your attitude. There's things you can do that are natural therapies. And these people shared a ton of information. So while I was gone, over the next couple weeks, my parents received all kinds of information about different ways of treating cancer. And through our conversations, because I, you know, we were in contact after seeing that news story, I kept calling back. You know, it's not, I didn't want to leave my family. I just didn't want the chemo. So as soon as they said, you know, talk to us about this, and maybe there's some other way we can, you know, we can find a different way to do it, I was, you know, I was willing to put in as much work as I had to.
So did the NIH have anything to say about this at all?
No. Well, Dana-Farber reported my parents to Department of Social Services as unfit for trying to, you know, listen and work with me with a natural, you know, way of treatment. But they, DSS never took the case. You know, I think it was partially because of my age at the time, 16, where 17 would be considered an adult, you know, in some places, and especially when the story is out about a 16-year-old who was able to fend for his own, you know, with cancer on the road and orchestrate this escape. They said he's definitely mature enough to make decisions, you know, regarding his life and treatment. So, no one got involved. I was allowed to pursue my own path of natural healing, which involved a dietary change, tea that eliminated toxins. from my body, and a treatment that was being used in Canada as an immune system booster called 714X.
So tell us about that, Billy. Because I actually flew up, you know, and met Gaston and just in a couple of years ago, and I had a heart attack, a big one, last September. And one of the reasons I had my heart attack is because I have a genetic thing called MTHFR, because I ate too many carbs, like simple sugars, you know, breads and white flours and things like that, that were supplemented with a cheap form of folic acid.
Yeah.
And it becomes a toxin to your body. And so recently I pulled out my 714X last week, and I've started doing it again. That's what made me think to call you again. So I'd love for you to tell us about that and how you detox from the toxins and how you use 714X and SCAT-T, and take us step by step through your progress. How were you when it started? How long did it start to take working? And what were some of the first things that you saw that you knew you were on your way to getting better?
Well, where I began was, you know, it was, you know, and I feel now, you know, every day I kind of believe that the mind-body connection is stronger than I once did. I always heard from day one, from my oncologist at Dana-Farber, we have a treatment, we have this chemotherapy, it's designed, you know, to kill the cancer, but it can only do half the work. It can only do half the work. It's your attitude, it's your belief that what you're doing is helping you, and your will to live, and that's going to be the other half of what gets you better. They said 50-50. It was medicine and mind. Now, going up to Canada, talking to Gaston and Jason, they said the same thing. We have a therapy. You know, it's not like chemotherapy. It's different. It supports your body's natural immune function. It can do this for you. It works this way, but it can only do half the battle. It's your will to live. It's your attitude. It's your belief in what you're doing is right. That's going to bring you the other half of the way. And I, you know, that it just struck me because it's the only thing that I've ever experienced, you know, going between the two ways of medicine that was similar. And it was that connection, the mind-body connection.
So what did you do? What was the mind-body thing that you did? How did you do that?
Well, I began by just looking through pretty much all the letters that people had sent. People sent thousands of letters. People that saw the story on the news, they sent thousands of letters to my house. And I started reading through them. And I started organizing them. Some were about diet. Some were about specific therapies, you know, somewhere about kind of, you know, other therapies that I'd never heard of. I just started organizing them and building piles. And the pile that I saw grow the quickest was one that talked about diet being a factor in getting better from an illness. And so I just, anytime one would start talking about diet, I'd throw it right in the pile. And, you know, I'd move on to the next one. And then later I'd go through and, you know, go through the diet. And after I went through the diet the second time, I realized, well, they're all saying similar things. It's, you know, it looks like you want to get the most amount of nutrition out of the least amount of effort. So it's mostly, you know, a lot of vegetables, a lot of whole grains. There was no red meat, no white flour, no sugar, no dairy.
So what kind of whole, I'm curious here, what kind of whole grains do you eat?
Well, today I eat differently than I did when I was in my healing crisis.
Wait, let's talk about when you were in your crisis. What did you eat?
Well, that was the first time that we ever heard of brown rice instead of white rice. So that was one. This was in 1992. When this happened, so it was, 1994, and it was before the internet was really being used at all for anything. And we had the internet, but it was, I think, you know, one sentence messages my mom would send to her sister, and that was about it. So as far as access to information, we had nothing. Just to hear that white flour wasn't healthy was a shock at the beginning. So it was, the first recipes were either organic vegetables, which were hard to come by, or for us living on the South Shore of Boston, like locally grown produce was the next best thing that we could get.
So when you first started doing the 7, well, were you doing 714X and SEACT at the same time?
I was, yeah. First thing I did was the diet, changed the diet, and just eliminated the red meat, the dairy, the flour, and the sugar. The next thing I did was the SEACT, which a lot of people were sending information about. There were different companies, different brands, so it was very confusing. There's a lot of people talking about the same thing, but everyone's saying, make sure you do the right way, you take the right one. And so just looking through them, we found one that seemed okay.
What would your diet, what would you have for breakfast? Because I want people to understand really what you're talking about. Would you eat? People, when I first started changed my diet, I would starve sometimes. I'd get so frustrated, I'd break down in tears. So give people an idea what you would have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, it's, maybe we should have my mom on the show, because I was living with her, and she did most of the cooking. I remember, I remember one of my favorites for dinner was stuffed peppers, and instead of with, like, ground beef or ground turkey, she'd use tofu. So at that time, that was our learning curve. That's where we started with, as far as like a meat substitute. To talk about the diet that I was on back then, it's a little different than, I think it's a little different than what's the most helpful for your listeners today. It's been a long time, and ideas about diet change, they change often. So
what do you do today?
Well, again, today I just try to think about the most amount of nutrition that I can get with the least amount of effort from my body. So I also think about, the cost of things. So, I found that kale and other produce that's very high in nutrition, it's very cost effective. It's just a good thing to eat.
I agree. I do the same thing. In fact, I've started drying kale, and I found it's a great substitute for chips,
Yeah, which is like my whole family's curse is we love chips, like anything crunchy, anything. It's just a comfort. It's like a comfort food. I mean,
it's great.
It's great. So
when you first started doing this, the 714X and the SEAT-T, how did you feel the first week, or do you remember? How long was it before you saw a result? When did you go get some more tests, and how did you know it was working?
It was just one day when, I woke up and my mom, she kind of looked at me and said, "You look like you're getting better. Your hair looks like it's a little fuller today." And, it might have been just that seed that she planted in my head of hope, but at that moment, I just began feeling 100%. And after that, I just felt even better. And it was, I could kind of track it through, how I felt after school, it's mm-hmm. like that's a pretty standard ritual you go through every day. So if, you're tired an hour after school and then, the next week you're, not even tired until 2 hours after,
mm-hmm.
just a different way to track it. But, the most thing I saw was my skateboarding, because I'd go skateboarding every day with the same guys, and I'd end up just being the last person that wanted to stop. I just wanted to keep doing it. I had a lot of energy, and I just felt great.
I can so relate to that. When I was in the, it was almost like I needed somebody to tell me I had permission to stay alive. Because the doctor said when I was in the hospital, here are your prescriptions for your statins, and they, you know, we were having great results, and I said, I don't want it. And he said, well, you're a dead woman. And so everything was great. I don't even have a doctor, and about 2 months ago, I went back to the doctor to get an echocardiogram just to see how I was doing, and the people, or maybe 3 months ago, and the people in the lab testing room looked at my results, and she said, I got to go get a doctor and talk about this. And it scared me. I've been feeling great, and all of a sudden I go see them, and I feel terrible. So it set me back. So I so understand getting feedback from your family that you really are doing well, even though you know you're doing well. That's kind of why I wanted to do this. I want people to know that the hope is really there. So how long was it before you got results that it was gone?
It's like 2 months after I began.
So you went from dying to 2 months down the road you were well.
Well, dying. I mean, we're all dying.
I mean, according to the doctors.
According to the doctors, yeah. According to the doctors, the only hope being, you know, more chemotherapy and more radiation. You know, which is not really, I mean, I don't take that very seriously. You know, now, kind of seeing the way things are, you know, a doctor telling you you're dying, like, I mean, he's not doing his job. If he doesn't tell you you're dying.
Yeah,
I guess so.
They don't give you any hope.
You look hard enough, yes. Like, we all have something really wrong with us. That would, you know, it could scare you to death. And scare you to death, it's, you know, it's that mind telling you that you're dying. You know, and how powerful that mind is. So
how do you do the treatments now?
Yeah, I do. I have.
How do you stay healthy today?
Well, you know, I've been lucky enough to, you know, have work with organic produce. You know, I work for this, you know, natural health, natural retailer that has a lot of organic produce, and I'm, you know, like the manager in the produce department, so I have a real hands-on, you know, my daily activity is hands-on for the thing that I'm the most passionate about, and it's just, like I was saying, it's the most nutrition per bite that you can get, because I feel like that does really make a difference, and it can really give anyone that chooses to, you know, eat that way just a better quality of life. You know, I've been hurt. I've, you know, I've gone through suffering. And I think that changing the way I ate really helped that, and I even believe that it could have prevented a lot of the things I went through. And for it to be such a daily ritual, such like a personal thing that everyone does every day. Like, everyone knows what you like to eat. You know, and I think everyone knows how it makes them feel. I know if I eat, you know, if I eat something, you know, too much, I don't feel good, and I regret it. If I eat something that I, you know, if I know it doesn't agree with me, like, I don't do very well with dairy. I've got, you know, I'm like Native American, and there's, you know, a problem with dairy and, I guess, Native American, you know, people. But I like ice cream. If I eat ice cream, yeah, I enjoy it at the time, but, you know, I feel kind of, like, sick afterwards. I don't...
So do you do, today, do you do any the SEACT or 714X today?
Today, yeah, I have, you know, some 714X. I'll do once a year as a maintenance cycle. They also have, you know, developed a drop that you can put under your tongue.
Of 714X?
That's right, yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
and how do you do it? You just
If I start feeling something coming on, I'll just, you know, start taking a couple drops under my tongue.
And it's sublingual, and do you have to do it? I know you have to do the injections or the nebulizer for so many days in a row. Do you have to do that so many days in a row?
I don't. I just, I didn't see any of the instructions saying it was, specific cycles like the injection or the nebulizer. So I'll just take it, I'll just take it every day and keep feeling great until something else.
That's great. So when you do the 714, that's for your maintenance, do you do the nebulizer or do you do the injection thing?
I do the injection. I never have done the nebulizer.
Those injection things are a little bit tough for me. I do it, but it's hard for me.
Well,
it's hard for me.
Hard how? Like hard finding the area or...
Well, you know, when you first put it in, it feels really cold, so cold that it hurts. It's a weird feeling for me. I don't know. It's just a weird feeling for me. I don't know. I struggle with doing it, but I do it, and I believe in it. I'm doing it now with my heart. So tell us what you know about 714 minutes. What does it do for you? Why would somebody even want to do it? And it doesn't, well, I'll let you answer the question. I won't put words in your mouth. Does it cure? Or what does it do for you?
I think cure is not a good word. It's a bad word, you know, like a four-letter word. Cure is just not a word that I haven't even actually said that word in a long time or heard anyone say that. But 714X is not, I don't think it's anything like that.
Is it an immune enhancer? Is that what it does? That's what I understand.
Well, what 714X does is it restores the flow of the lymphatic fluid. Okay? So when I was, let's say my belief in what happened to me, I believe that I was, when I was 14, I was hit by a landscaping truck and had my arm ripped off. They put it back on, and over the next couple of years and, half a dozen surgeries, they were able to repair it, so I can use it. And it was immediately after that I developed cancer.
That makes so much sense.
At the time, never would even think of anything, but my first visit back to my orthopedic surgeon, after being diagnosed with cancer, the first thing he said was, "I just want you to know that you did not develop your cancer because of anything that we did, any surgeries or anything we did to help, with your arm." I was like, "What are you talking about?" Like, I was like blown away. Like, what are you even like? Why are you so worried? Like, what are you even talking about? We wouldn't even think of that unless you brought it up. And then later on, after running away and after, finding out about just other perspectives on what causes cancer, what helps cancer, I was like, oh, well, maybe trauma could have some kind of part in weakening your immune system. So what I believe happened was I was, hit by that truck. That trauma weakened my immune system. The next 2 years of being... going through six surgeries, being on prescription pain pills over the whole 2 years, I think that really weakened my immune system and gave cancer an opportunity, to get a foothold in my body. And it did that by clogging up my lymph nodes. So when I found out about a therapy that is designed to directly go into your lymphatic system and restore the flow, I was very interested in something like that. It sounded like I knew what the problem was, mm-hmm. which is important for me it was really important for me to know why this problem, you know, developed in my system. The doctor said it was genetic. I'm adopted. You know, I don't, they said Hodgkin's is genetic. I don't know who my mother is. I don't know who my father is. You know, my birth mother and birth father, I don't know who they are. So I just have to give the doctors all my faith and hope they know what's best for me, with, you know, blindly, without even knowing what caused this problem.
So, I don't even know what to say there. I mean, I just so relate to that. How did you figure out what to do? How did you make the decision? Of all the things out there, how did you make the decision what to do? If somebody's struggling, when I came home from the hospital, or the day after my heart attack, I was like, okay, I got to find out what's out there. I got to make a choice because I've got one time to do this. How did you figure out what thing to do?
Well, I, you know, listen to my heart. And that's all I can say. I just listened to my heart, and it was, you know, really clear what spoke to me. Just like that decision to run away from home, that was just listening to my heart. I didn't know why. I just heard a voice say, run, and I had to run. I knew it was, you know, towards death. I knew there was no hope where I ran to. It wasn't like I was running to one of these, you know, clinics in Mexico to get better. I was just running because that's what my inner voice told me to do, was run. And the same thing happened when I started looking through all these different letters, and it was just, you know, it was just what I believed in and what worked for me, you know, what my heart told me was right.
So what are your passions today, Billy?
Well, I have a lot of passions. It's, you know, I have a passion for the skateboarding that I've always done. You know, it got me through a lot of hard times. When I had cancer, I'd always, you know, I'd, you know, kind of be a little depressed, and I'd go skateboarding, and it'd just feel good, you know, learning different moves on the board. So that's one of my passions.
I mean, globally, for, I know you have passions about other helping people. What are they? I mean, do you have things, about alternative medicine or politics? What is the things where you feel passion to educate other people?
Well,
does that make sense?
It does, and it's not anything I never attach myself to anything. You know, I don't usually promote. I don't promote much. It's not like I'm not easily marketable, because I'm not trying to sell anything. You know, even the treatments that I used, you know, in my book, I never say, this is what you should do. This is something that's good for you. It's not. It's more, I'd say, listening to your heart and what's best for you. You know, when I share my story, it's just to give another perspective, you know, up from someone that's gone through cancer, gone through chemo, gone through other ways of treating cancer, and I'm still here. I'm not saying that's the only thing there is. You know, FDX, 714X, diet, those are just things that I did. But, you know, I read thousands of other letters with, you know, all kinds of different therapies. But my passion is to talk about my story, hopefully, you know, reach somebody before they get into a healing crisis themselves, and they can, you know, just have like a different perspective on it.
Tell me about going to Harvard.
Harvard, it was...
That's exciting.
It was. It was, you know, it was just that towards the end of when I was working on my book, and it was just a random, you know, just a random call. He, a guy from Harvard had just kind of like Googled alternative medicine, Boston, and, you know, come across my name and called me and asked if I could come and talk to, you know, the future oncologists of, you know, of Harvard, like the future of medicine. And it was just amazing. I mean, they were learning from me. I didn't realize, you don't realize it, but just being, you know, a cancer patient, you know more about the medicine, you know, on some aspects of it than the doctors do, you know, because they've never been sick. They don't go through those, you know, those emotions you go through. So the talk, I think, was really to help them understand the future patients and how, you know, maybe my experience, I didn't have the best communication, which forced me to do these extreme measures, like run away and you know, be all over the news. Like, these are things that you don't, you know, I wouldn't want anyone else to have to go through. And I think that, you know, them asking me to come in and talk would at least give these future doctors a new perspective on maybe, you know, how to better communicate with the patients so they could both be more comfortable.
I'm interested in what kind of questions did you get from, was it medical students or residents, or was it practicing? What kind of group did you talk to?
Harvard was medical students.
What kind of questions did you get?
The kind of questions I would receive were actually have them in my book. My co-author, Linda Conti, was there, and she was able to take notes, and we actually use those for the book, which I don't have a copy right in front of me. But
you there?
Yep.
Sorry. So give me an idea, because I find that when I went to a doctor, like I said, 3 months ago after I had that test. I went to a cardiologist because I wanted them to read the echo for me. I wanted to see, am I better? And if I am better, can they tell that I'm better? I mean, I know I feel better, and I mean, I can do anything I want to do. I can cut grass or hike or whatever I want to do, and I'm fine. But I wanted to know, was there documentation from allopathic lab tests? So the doctor spent my entire visit with a notepad asking me questions. I didn't even get to talk to him about my lab test. So I'm curious, this was the same doctor that told me I was dead, and now he wanted to know, he said, I'm going to do this myself. He didn't say he was going to do it for his patients, so he was going to do it for himself. So what did the medical students, were they interested? Did they believe you? Did they seem like they wanted to do this for their patients? What kind of feedback did you get from them?
I got it was a free lunch for them, a required class they had to attend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think I did a great job at, you know, explaining it to them. So if there was ever a question, they would know, you know, they could get in touch with me. If there was ever a need to learn more, if they ever had a patient that might benefit from knowing some of this stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, I do believe that they would know how, you know, the appropriate ways to get in touch with me or...
So did they ask questions, or did they just kind of sit there and...
They did, yeah. No, they asked a bunch of questions. And I'll read them to you.
We have about 10 minutes, so I want to give you an opportunity to talk about anything that you want to talk about in that 10 minutes as well. Do you have anything
okay.
you want to talk about?
Well, I'll just, you know, some of these questions, I would, you know, I just want to let you know what they were asking.
Okay.
You know, 10 minutes, okay. One of the first ones was why do I think the doctors have not gotten behind 714X? You know, it's kind of like, I don't know.
Did you tell them Big Pharma?
Yeah. I told them there haven't been clinical trials done on 714X. Doctors can't talk about this because they don't know about it. They don't know about it because there have been no studies. And then I went in and started talking to them about my experience in 2002 when Dana-Farber actually tried to buy 714X. What happened was, you know, I don't know if I should go ahead.
Tell it. Yeah, well, I mean, if you're okay, I'm okay.
I'm not okay. So
okay.
It was just something that happened when Dana-Farber was testing 714X, wanted to buy it, and, you know, the inventor said it wasn't for sale. They just wanted to get the test results to show that it was an effective treatment for cancer. And, you know, Dana-Farber, he said, well, if we can't buy it, we're not giving you the test results, and, you know, we're ripping up the contract, and here's your money back. Here's your money back for the, you know, the testing you paid for. So that turned into like a breach of contract lawsuit that, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think, you know, I personally know Gaston Massens, and I have the utmost respect for everything that he's done. And I've tried his products on myself, and I think that they're fabulous. I wish that everybody had the opportunity to know about those products, 714X, and able to get it for themselves. As far as I know, and I'm not a doctor, and Billy's not a doctor, and neither we're not trying to diagnose or treat you. We're just, this radio show is for informational purposes only. So I'm not aware of any side effects that it has. Did you have any side effects, Billy?
No, but I mean, if we have only a couple minutes left,
yes.
Side effects of, like, in any healing process can be, you know, fever, you know, just your body going through stress getting better, or, you know, side effects of 714X, there have not been many recorded. For me, if I injected myself too quickly, it would be painful, and it would burn for about 10 minutes, 20 minutes maybe. But I could, you know, ice the area, and that would help relieve any discomfort. You know, at 16, I gave myself these injections every day for 6 months. After 2 months, the cancer went away. Shortly after that, there was another girl in a neighboring town who was told by Dana-Farber that she had 2 weeks to live because of a tumor the size of a baseball that was in her sinus cavity. You know, they said this thing is going to, like, wrap around her carotid artery and just take her out in her sleep in the next 2 weeks. Her family saw our story on the news and got in contact with my mom. And, you know, the next day this girl was over my house, 7-year-old girl who had already been through all the chemotherapy that they would give her and, you know, gave her 2 weeks to live.
How's she doing? Do you know?
She asked me if the treatment hurt. I said, no. She said, do you think it'll help me? I said, yeah. She started taking it, and I think it was probably about 8 months, and there was no cancer at all.
Wow, that's amazing.
And that was 19 years ago, and, you know, she's doing well today.
You've talked to her?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
There's another man also, who at the same time I was friends with his son in high school. I was over his house shortly after I began my 714X treatment. He had just come home from a doctor's appointment where they diagnosed him with multiple myeloma. They didn't tell him, you know, they didn't give him a death sentence, but they said, if you're going to buy a car, I'd try to pay it off in 4 years. You know, he saw me, like, he talked to me when he came home. He's like, aren't you that kid from the news? I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. He's like, what are you doing? Like, I told him I did this. I'm doing this. I changed my diet. I did this. And he started doing that too. And with a guy that was given, you know, less than 5 years to live, he just changed his attitude. He changed his life. He, you know, he left his job. He started doing things that helped relieve his stress, like making fly fishing lures and drinking green tea. And the same thing, he's, you know, when my book today, hey, you didn't know it, today is the 1-year anniversary that my book has been out.
Really?
I released it 1 year ago today.
Congratulations, Billy.
I'm so proud
of you.
And after receiving my first printing, it was a joy to be able to go and drop off a whole stack of books for this girl, Katie, and for this man, Mike, who shared their stories in my book as well. And they're still here, just like me.
So we have about 3 or 4 minutes. We've not talked about SCACT. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, SCACT was, you know, it was the thing everyone was talking about, SCACT. So it just seemed like something I should do. Take a tea that gets rid of toxins from your body. I felt like I was full of toxins from the chemo. And that was a great way to start any kind of healing program, was to get rid of the toxins that I already had built up. There was a lot of controversy from where to get it. And, you know, back then I thought that, you know, the most important thing you could do would be to be diligent in your search for the most pure form of the original formula. And so that's what I did. And I found that in the SCACT that my mother sells at the BillyBeth.net website. Today, for anyone else, I always say, you know, I really do think that what you believe is more important than a lot of things. So if you can't find that original, true form of SCACT, the most, you know, pure ingredients, if you find something else and you take it and you believe it's going to help you, I think that is going to be, you know, more important than the stress it's going to take to try to be very specific and trying to be perfect, which anyone, if you've been diagnosed with cancer and you're trying a new regimen, you're trying to follow a diet, you're trying to follow this, you get very frustrated if you can't be perfect about it. And that frustration, you know, I think it could be harmful. And I just want to encourage people that are on that path, just being on that path, you're already doing so much better for yourself. And your belief in what you're doing, you should just have such a strong belief that, you know, what you're doing is right. And that alone is going to take you most of the way. Like they used to say to me, it was 50%. I believe it's more than that now.
I do too, Billy. I do too. Mind is everything. You know, quantum mechanics today has proven that there is no matter on the quantum level. If that's true, and it is, then we're one with everything. So mind and thought is everything indeed. You're absolutely right. So why don't you tell us again where we can find your book and your website, just to make sure everybody knows.
My book, if you're lucky enough to live in the Massachusetts area, is at most bookstores in Massachusetts. Online, it's Amazon.com, and it's also available electronically with Amazon Kindle. The website, thebillybeststory.com, it's got my contact information. If you had any questions, it goes directly to my personal email, and I answer them all. And it's a joy to be able to share my story, because that's how I was able to get better from my cancer, was from other people sharing their experiences with me. And
thank you, Billy. Thank you for
listening, and thank you for having me on the show.
Congratulations on your anniversary, and I can't believe I called you exactly on that time, because it was just about a year ago, and you called and said, I'm getting ready to publish my book. Can you give me some suggestions? Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It's just kind of a big synchronicity. So anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show. I'm so proud of you, and I'm honored to know you. Thank you for everything you're doing to help other people. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.